Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's episode is the final, conclusive episode where we wrap up the U.S. men's national team talk. Obviously, they lost to Mexico 2-1 in the Gold Cup final. I had a conversation with Kefren, a two-hour conversation with Kefren in the previous episode, but we didn't go directly and specifically talking about the national team itself. Instead, we kind of spoke around culture, right? And made culture the primary focus of the conversation that obviously is related to the U.S. men's national team and the U.S. Soccer Federation and Major League Soccer. It's all connected, guys. But in this episode with Benny, who happened to have been in Las Vegas, we get specific. We talk about Pochettino, of course. We talk about the roster decisions. We talk about why he may have made certain decisions and not others. We again talk about Diego Luna and give higher level takeaways from the match and the program itself. After this episode, of course, we'll go back to our regularly scheduled program where we do a lot of coaching education. We do a lot of parent education. And look, the reality is, guys, that if you're not paying attention to the national team, the international, the professional level, even if you're operating at the youth level and your main interests lie there, you're being greatly impacted by the professional side. So it's important to key in onto these topics. All right, I hope you enjoy this one. Obviously, I'm going to tell you coaches to go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium education programs for you there. Please don't wait any longer. Your fall seasons are going to start. Some of you have already formed teams. Some of you have maybe even started training already. And for those of you who haven't, gosh, get your asses to 343coaching.com and sign up. I would recommend, look, if you just heard about 343 and you haven't been here for a very long time, just get the free course, get to know us a little bit more, get to understand what it is that we've accomplished in the youth soccer ecosystem, the ecosystem as a whole, before you dive into the premium stuff, even though I don't think you have to, I'm going to tell you that anyway. And guys, if you've been here over a year and kind of consistently been consuming what it is that we've been putting out there, I would say it's time to dive headfirst into the premium program. Thousands of coaches have done so over the years, and hundreds of those guys have taken the program seriously and consequently catapulted their coaching careers, catapulted their teams, catapulted their players to levels that they didn't think were possible. So once more, 343coaching.com is where you want to go. Parents, you are a huge influence on your kids. It's not just up to the coach. It's not just up to the club. It's not just up to the ecosystem. It's up to you. So we've codified our decades worth of experience for you at 343masterclass.com. So go to 343masterclass.com, sign up, and better guide your kids. All right, folks, here we go. Enjoy. I think you misunderstood my text message about betting and who to bet on, who not to bet on. So I would have bet on Mexico, you know, because I wanted the U.S. to win so that people wouldn't talk. Yeah, I wanted the U.S. to win so that people wouldn't be imbeciles and start talking about Pochettino should be sacked and all the stupid shit that they say. That's why I wanted the U.S. to win. But if the U.S. did not win and Mexico wins, then I would make some money. You know what I mean? That was the psychology from my side.
I fucked up then. I thought you were saying go for U.S.
So that's what I would do during the Berhalter era, because it's the exact opposite. The exact opposite. During the Berhalter MLS nonsense, it's like, I want the U.S. to lose bad, like fuck the U.S. So I would always bet on the U.S. winning in the World Cup. I would bet on them winning in all competitions. I would bet that they would win the game. And so when they would win the game, I'm like, well, fuck it. I at least made some money, you know. And if they lose, I lost money, but I'm happy because I can just massive shit talking, massive agenda at that point.
Yeah. Well, even it's the same. I lost money, you know, but still kind of happy that they lost, bro, because again, we've seen this narrative that keeps getting pushed out of all the shit that we're going to talk about today. But technically, okay, I didn't lose because there was another bet. It was like both teams to score. I had a feeling it would be a 2-2 game or 3-1 game. So I cashed that bet out and no pasa nada.
Gotcha. I thought they were in combination, like the U.S. to win plus teams to score. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure you can make bets like that, though, right?
I asked them. They said on this one you couldn't. I don't know. This particular sports book was kind of like a smaller one. I feel like if you go to like Caesar's Palace or something, they have like a massive one. You can do all kinds of crazy parlays and prop bets and stuff. I asked them. I was like, hey, can I take Big Pat to score? They're like, we don't have that one, dude. So thank God.
Got you.
But they didn't, bro, because another shocking performance, dude.
Got you. All right. So kick us off, dude.
Where do we start, dude? First of all, I haven't had the chance to listen to your Kefren episode, but you know, how did it go? What did you guys mainly chat about? I know it was a lot about culture, but did the topic of this game come up at all or not so much?
Yeah, so Kef hit me up maybe close to 2 weeks ago. And I think it was after the U.S. had lost to Turkey and Switzerland or one or the other or something like that. And we got massively exposed for the frauds that we are. And these players got massively exposed for the frauds that they are. And he just hit me up. He's like, hey, man, we should jump back on and do a pod. You know, this is shocking. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, let's do the timing maybe after the Gold Cup final, because I had kind of predicted that it would be the U.S. and Mexico anyway, even though we're terrible. And he's like, okay, cool. So that was the origin of it all. So we hopped on right after, you know, obviously Mexico beat the United States. We recorded. And I know where he's coming from because he's in Holland and it was super late at night. This guy's a beast. He hopped on to record a podcast with me at 3 a.m. Okay. So it went from 3 to 5 a.m. for him. And I know how it is over there because I've been there and other countries in Europe many, many times. Finding a broadcast to watch like the U.S. versus Mexico or something like that, good luck, man. You aren't going to find it. You're going to have to struggle to find a stream somehow, some way. And so he didn't actually catch the game, but he's very seasoned in American soccer. He's seen the other national team games and stuff. So we didn't really talk specifically about the team, its performance during the match, the particular players, none of that. We talked more generally about, oh, the U.S. lost against Mexico. What else is new? Or we're not as good because we beat Mexico in the past, but let's be real. Are we better than Mexican soccer? Are we better than Mexican players, generally speaking? Nah, not so much, you know? So the whole conversation centered around culture and how culture is, in his opinion, the dominating fundamental influence that drives whether you individually or collectively or as a nation are successful or unsuccessful. So that was the whole discussion, Benny. And yes, it's linked obviously to the U.S. men's national team and Pochettino and this current generation and the quote unquote golden generation, which obviously we know are frauds at this point. It's all connected. So it got connected, but it wasn't specific.
Yeah. So I'm guessing you actually did watch this game. Because I know you didn't really watch the semifinal. You didn't watch the quarterfinal. Fans want to know, Gary, did you watch this game?
No, I did. I did watch this game. And for folks who are just hopping on right now for the first time, yeah, I didn't watch like the Guatemala game because first off, it's Guatemala. It's not that interesting to me. Two, the U.S. men's national team in general is more of a hate watch than, I'm excited. The team plays today. I want to, you know, cheer, rah, rah. Like I'm not a fan. You know what I mean? And then thirdly, you know, obviously Brian is coaching in the USL and his team, AV Alto, was having a match during the Guatemala game. So that's more interesting to me. And so I would tune into that. That game started like 15, 20 minutes before the national team. So when that game went to halftime, okay, I switch over to the men's national team. And when that game ended, I switch over to the national team versus Guatemala. But there were no conflicts, Benny. So yes, I saw the whole game.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to hear just a little bit of your analysis. For me personally, I was the first half I was watching the game, you know, Vegas poolside, 6 Coronas deep, and then so my vision was a little blurry. But second half, I went into the casino and watched it on the big screen. But just my general take, Mexico bossed the game. I mean, more possession, more chances created. They just look like the better team all around. Gilberto Mora. That's what's cracked, dude. That guy's not even close to anything that we have in it. Dude, you know, I posted about Diego Luna and just like a small snippet of your take on it. Dude, we got the most hate that we've ever got in one Instagram post, like over 100 comments saying, Gary, what are you talking about? This guy's a clown. This guy has no idea. One guy was like, football knowledge and hair, two things that you don't have. So it was just great. If anybody wants to laugh, go look at our Instagram. Go look at the Diego Luna post, because it's insane the amount of people that were hyping him up. And you know what's funny, Gary, is that before the game, because I posted it 2 days before the final, before the game, the comments were coming in nonstop, bro. Like, what are you talking about? As soon as the game ends, all the comments stop, bro. This guy was invisible in the game, bro. I think everybody was expecting him to score two goals, be the man of the match. But again, in a big game, he wasn't there, in my opinion, dude.
Yeah, so, no question. It's funny how that works, right? And we mentioned this last time you and I hopped on to record about Weston McKennie and, you know, Weston McKennie, whenever it was 6 years ago, Berhalter just taken over the team and everybody was saying, oh, Berhalter is, you know, the American Pep Guardiola. He has this system of play, you know, and nobody defined what the system of play was because nobody knew what the fuck they were talking about, but he has this possession style. He's going to bring to America what we've all wanted for so long. It's the America Barcelona. It's the American Man City. That's what it's going to be. And I'm like, okay, well, guys, if that is what's being proposed, then why is Weston McKennie on the squad? Because that doesn't fit the player profile. And people went crazy, you know, and obviously all people who've never done anything in football in their entire life, you know, they get the rocks off of trying to dunk on people and being on anonymous idiots online. So they're like, oh, look, haha, you don't know what you're doing. It just got purchased by Juventus. He's a global superstar now. And look, he scored on Barcelona during COVID. You know, you did a scissor kick. You have all this shit as if this guy is the next big thing. And they took it all out of context, Benny, because what I had explicitly said in my tweet thread, it wasn't just one tweet, it's a tweet thread. I explicitly said, if you want to play the way that is advertised by Berhalter and the media, that you want to play like Barcelona, this is not the player profile you want. Period. End of story. And look, now you fast forward 5 or 6 years from those remarks, and everybody's kind of like, all those same people, they're like, Weston McKennie, like, whatever. He's a good player, but like, is he really anything special? Like, seriously, the Americans are saying that. The guys who hyped him up like crazy are now saying, Weston McKennie, I mean, he probably should be the starter on the World Cup, but whatever. Yeah, motherfuckers. But it takes you 5 to 10 bloody years to catch up to what we as practitioners, legit people who actually know football, see immediately. And the same thing, I'm relating it now to your Diego Luna comments. The same thing with Diego Luna. Oh, Diego Luna, the next coming of Christ, you know, or something like this. I'm like, guys, first off, he's going to be 23 like next month. So he is not a 16-year-old or 17-year-old or 18-year-old like a Lamine Yamal or like Gilberto Gilberto Mora from Mexico. The guy who played in Mexico against the U.S. men's national team, started the game, is 16 years old. And he looks like a child, by the way. He doesn't look like these Nigerians or Cameroonians are like, yeah, right, you're 16. You're a fucking 38-year-old man. No, he looks like a youth soccer player who's 16. And he was balling the U.S. up. And here we are going into this game. Oh, Diego Luna. Wow, he's going to go to, who knows, where is he going to land in Europe and crush it over there? And be, guys, chill the fuck out. You played Guatemala. Who else did we even play? I don't even know the other opponents. Shocking opponents. When he played it, you said it in our other recording. When we played against Switzerland, when we played against Turkey, zero. Okay. We played against Mexico, zero. Non-existent. And whenever he'd get a touch, there ain't nothing there. Okay. Shocking. I will say one thing in his defense, and then I'll hand the mic back to you. Sometimes if you're a good player, a really great player, sometimes if you're surrounded by shocking players, you're shocking when you play a real team. Maybe if you put Diego Luna, or a good player, we don't know, with the quote-unquote A team, and you surround Luna with Pulisic, you surround him with, you know, McKennie, Adams, Anthony Robinson, Dest, you know, the whole crew that everybody here thinks is the special team, maybe he wouldn't be a zero against Switzerland, Turkey, or Mexico. Maybe he would show some of the things that we all know he might be capable of. But yeah, silencio now. Now you saw him against a real team, mutes everybody.
Yeah. And Gary, a real team, I mean, Mexico, they won, but are they even that good?
True.
Bro, come on, you know?
True. So,
but anyways.
We'll give Mexico, really quick, we'll give Mexico a lot of credit because they legit bossed the game, like total bosses.
No, they did. They did. They, in some moments, they made us a bet Collins, bro. Again, I was five coronas deep, so you can't really count on my analysis, bro.
Let's look at the superficial stats real quick. The superficial stats. Superficial stats is
60-40, no? Mexico 60.
Okay, Mexico 60, U.S. 40. So that is significant. People sometimes say, oh, we had possession, and you're like 54 to 46. That is a split possession. But once you get into the 60 range, you boss the game.
Yeah, for sure. What was your analysis of the game? Just a quick one. You don't have to go in full detail.
Well, so really quick. We scored on a set piece with a tall center back. Shocking. I mean, that's what American soccer has been forever. When you play against a decent opponent, scoring from the run of play, from actual build-up play and orchestration and possession, and then it turns up into a beautiful combination goal or something like that, that rarely ever happens, right? It's always, oh, we're playing against Portugal or something like that. Oh, set piece, the corner, or scramble in the box, or put it in the mixer, ricochets all over the place, and you score. To Chris Richards' credit, it was a nice strike with the head. To Berhalter's credit, it was a nice service as well. And, you know, same as it ever was. Set piece extraordinaires, U.S. men's national team. But Mexico then bossed and dominated the whole thing. They scored real goals. What can I say?
Yeah.
Nothing's changed.
Dude, I wanted to fucking kill Berhalter in the last 5 minutes of the game. Dude, this guy just moments for the U.S. to go forward and maybe create something. And then this fool just turnover after turnover, bro. I wanted to choke that guy, bro. Especially when you got money on these. Like, what are you doing, bro?
Oh, yeah. That's why. See, that's why betting is so huge, right? Because people don't actually have so much passion. But when you put money on the line, then there's passion all of a sudden. When you put money on Alabama college football at a bowl or something, everybody's obviously passionate. Fuck yeah, I put $200 down on the Team X, Y, or Z. So yeah. Anyway.
It was funny. We went to get like a slice of pizza and they had it was like all Mexicans working there, but there was like this young kid behind, he was like making the pizzas, putting them in the oven, and they had the Mexico game on the TV. And like any like shot, this will be like going crazy. I'm like, dude, you got money on this game? Where he's like, I just put $800, my whole paycheck in Mexico. His boss is like, hey, like, get back to work. Oh, dude, it was, Well, I think I want to save the Pochettino stuff to the end because there's a lot on that. But you tweeted MLS and USMNT fans are the most arrogant fans in the world. Unjustifiable arrogance, of course. So. What triggered you, or what did you see? I'm sure there was a lot, but why did you post that?
No, it's something that I've said in the past, but not that much. I should say more often. And it's based on just my observations of MLS/USMNT fans for the past decade or so, in particular. Ever since we started winning against Mexico and stuff like that in the CONCACAF region, they started getting this sort of arrogance, and not because of the win-loss column, but again, I think it's Dunning-Kruger all over again, where they've learned just enough to think that they know what they're talking about, right? And they become very dangerous. So it's also to combat this narrative from, like, say, Alexi Lalas. Alexi Lalas likes to say that we have an inferiority complex here in America in soccer, like, oh, we don't think we're good enough or something. It's the exact opposite of that. And I'll give you an example. We see it right now happening on all our feeds. Every dumbass online is saying, oh, Pochettino doesn't know what he's doing. Pochettino picked the wrong players. He starts the wrong guys. He puts them out of position. He waits too long to make substitutions. He doesn't understand the American soccer culture. He doesn't understand the American player. I mean, you name it. The fans here think they know more than Pochettino. And I get it. Being critical of the manager, for instance, and talking shit and all this stuff is leveling up of one's fandom instead of always being rah, rah, cheer, cheer, no matter what. It is. But it's Dunning-Kruger. Like, they actually are at a stage where they actually think that they know more and are more subject matter experts than Mauricio Pochettino. So that's supreme arrogance, Benny. Supreme arrogance. Incredible arrogance. But it's really ignorance. That's why I tweeted that.
Yeah. I want to go back to a comment from somebody. It was a couple podcasts ago when we were talking about the fans. And he was saying, I listen to almost every podcast you put out, but if I'm trying to follow what you want from the American football fan, I'm lost. He says, fans have the power, but it's our fault because we want to support it. Then it's USA fans suck because they don't show up to games. We can't be excited our team does well when they play, but we are supposed to live and breathe our country's national team. We're all casuals, but you aren't watching the national team, but instead a USL League 2 team instead. And I love USL. I guess your take to sum up is confusing. Please explain how the U.S. soccer fans can live up to your expectations of real football fans.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Again, that would take up multiple episodes in and of itself. My memory is such that I remember the last things that you say to me. So I'm just going to pick up there. The serious hardcore, the non-casual, would be saying, fuck the national team, like fuck the program, fuck the system, burn it all down. Okay, burn the whole fucking house down. And yes, they shouldn't be showing up and they shouldn't be watching. And they should, yeah, the stadium should be empty as it is right now. All of that is true. But when the stadium was not empty and when people would show up, it's not like the Guatemalan Americans show up. And it's not the same feel, and it's not the same vibe in the stadium, and it's not the same culture, right? Or when the Mexican Americans show up to watch Mexico and root for Mexico and trash the opponent. When the American fans show up, it's not the same. It's soft. It's pussy. It's like the guy that's become a meme now with the Seattle Sounders from 10 years ago. Seattle, fight and win. What the fuck is this? So do I want you to show up? Yes, show up, but don't be that guy. And that's what you guys actually are. You may not see it because you see yourselves as way more hardcore than that guy. Poor guy, right? Poor guy. You're more hardcore than that guy, but you aren't like the Guatemalan Americans, the Mexican Americans, the South Americans. You are. You're soft. I know that you're in the stadium, barely paying attention to the match at times. You're pivoting over to your buddy and you're talking stupidities with your buddy, maybe talking about the NFL game or the NBA game or the NASCAR or what, just anything. It doesn't even have to be another sport. You're talking stupidities. Hey, you guys want a beer at halftime? Or I'll make a run. You know, I'll go 5 minutes before the 45th minute so that there's no line. What the fuck? That is casual as shit. Or if you're like fucking just hopping around dancing like the LAFC fans in the back of the goal, you know, trying to make the vibe like it is in Europe, but it's not real. You know, it's not real. If you participated in that, you know, deep inside that you're faking it. You know that you're trying to be part of something, but you aren't feeling it. You aren't dancing because you actually feel like dancing. So I don't know how to quantify it better than that, Benny, but that is what we mean by a casual. And that is what I mean by, hey, look at Pochettino's right. Look at the Guatemalan Americans. He's like, that's a soccer culture. In so many words, he kind of said, I wish we had that soccer culture here with the Americans. And people got pissed. People got, oh, how dare he say things like that. Like our former men's national team players, Hercules Gomez, Charlie Davies, insulted, you know, by those things. Yeah, because you're a bitch. You should be insulted. People who know the truth and agree with Pochettino are not insulted by that.
Yeah. And what did Pochettino say? He said, like, people have to realize that, you know, football is not an entertainment. It's, you know, and you look at the Guatemala fans and the Mexico fans and they show up and you can feel their energy. You can feel their passion and their commitment. But when it comes to the U.S., it's like you said, dude, it's all hanging out with my buddies and, you know, oh, the U.S. is in town. I'm gonna go watch, you know?
No, so my complaint with this guy's remarks is Pochettino is not the bad guy. You guys are the problem. You should be on yourselves. You should be asking more of yourselves. That is my expectation. Point the thumb instead of pointing the finger. That is what I want of the fans. They should look at themselves in the mirror like, hey, I'm actually part of the problem. How do I get better?
So how do they get better though, Gary?
Well, stop being a bitch. Stop combating the hardcores. When somebody comes out and says, soccer is not just a game. It's serious shit here and takes it seriously and is super passionate about it. Stop trying to destroy those people. Try to become those people. That's how they get better. Try to become like the hardcores. When people are, I'll take Central American or Mexican American or the Mexican chant. When the goalkeeper is going to take a goal kick and they're like, oh, puto, or whatever, right? Stop. Don't be the dumbass. Like, oh, it's so bad. Yeah, hate speech. Oh, stop the game. Yeah. You know, dock points from their team. Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy. And see it for what it is, which is not, it's not a hate speech. It's not a slur. It's none of that shit. It's part of their fucking soccer culture. And puto doesn't mean what you think it means. Don't be that dumbass who's out there supporting soft pussy-ass culture.
You think in a sense, one, the U.S. losing this game, and two, like Pochettino coming out and saying that, do you think fans are starting to wake up or still not so much? You're still a long way to go.
The thing that's cool about having somebody like Jurgen say the truthful things like this and take people out of blissful ignorance or Pochettino is that it gives a voice to the hardcores like us, right? Like the real ones in the ecosystem. It gives us strength to go out and reinforce that message, right? And combat the softness that is this ecosystem, combat the privileged entitlement culture that exists here. That's why that's important, Benny.
But even for me, Gary, like I don't feel like a hardcore myself. Like, I mean, look at me. I was at a pool, like basically watching the game. If I was like a true hardcore, I would have said like, hey, babe, like, no, I'm going to this place, watching the bar. Don't talk to me. But I don't feel that desire or passion to go and support the USMNT like that. It's just not in my blood like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So the question is why, right? So we need to explore why. And ultimately, unfortunately, everybody in the audience, ultimately it's going to lead to a discussion of promotion and relegation, ultimately, because you don't feel like being a hardcore or anything because there's nothing to be hardcore about. The only, like, what's there to be hardcore about? That shit doesn't represent my values or my ideologies. I don't feel connected to that thing. Why? Because they've made it exclusively about a business, about a transactional relationship between the business that is soccer and the customer that consumes what is produced by that business. They have made it a transactional relationship versus more than that. So that's why you don't feel any desire to go out there and be hardcore about things. The way you see me being quote unquote hardcore and so passionate when I talk about this stuff is because I'm hardcore about railing against what they represent. You feel me? So there is something for me to be hardcore about. It's just not hardcore about their product. It's hardcore about anyone or anything or any product that is anti them.
So you're hardcore anti-USMNT.
100%. But here's the twist, and here's where people need to really latch onto. That is the best way to be for the US soccer ecosystem. That is the best way to improve the soccer ecosystem. That is the best way and the best modality to show you want the U.S. men's national team to be the best in the world.
Would you consider yourself, Gary, a hardcore Argentina fan? Because, I mean, it's in your heritage, blood.
No. I mean, harder than a fan of the U.S. men's national team? Of course. Absolutely. Do I feel it when they play? Yes, absolutely. But the reason I say no is because do I feel it like the people over there feel it? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Right. When you see supporters of Boca or River or Independiente or Racing Club, or when people go see the national team, the Argentinians who go and see the national team play, I'm not like them. It's obvious.
Yeah. No, they're going extremely hard at every game, before the game, after the game. At halftime, they're probably analyzing the tactics, and those are real hardcores, bro.
Yeah, and if things aren't being done well, and those aren't stupid fans. Those people know soccer. Those people know football, okay? So when things aren't going well, or they see corruption, and obviously corruption is rampant and all these sorts of things, they don't put up with it. They'll be like, let's burn this whole motherfucker down. That's how hardcore they are. So that leads Pochettino to make some of the remarks that he makes, is because he actually knows what a proper football culture is. He knows what the ideal is, and he knows that it's not just the game, and he knows that it's not just entertainment, and he knows that it's not just business. Because if you make it just about entertainment or just the game or just business, you lose the essence of it all. You lose the passion of it all. It's gone. Football is not football.
Yeah. Let's talk more, Gary, on Pochettino. I love his comments after the game when people are asking him or saying basically like all these A-lister guys that were left off the roster. And he says, you know, who's to say that this player is even a lock on the national team? And when he went on to say, like, you already made the list, or you asked AI who's going to be on the team for next year? One, what do you think about Pochettino saying that? I think a lot of managers in the past haven't said that and haven't had the balls to say that. And two, why do you think all these USMNT fans are so keen on saying like, oh, this is already the roster, especially now that the US lost? Because I feel like if they would have won this final, that people would maybe say, or more leaning towards saying, oh, like, yeah, Luna should be a starter now, and maybe we should leave Pulisic off. But now the fact that they lost, it's like, oh, see, like, these are the guys, this wasn't our 18. So it's just so backwards, dude. But what do you think about Pochettino's comments first of all?
He's kind of taken a page out of Mourinho, and any legit manager, any manager worth their salt kind of makes fun of the media, either directly or indirectly, with different frequencies, with different levels of diplomacy or directness. So Mourinho obviously is infamous for like, you guys are retarded, you know, and let me tell you why you're retarded. And Bielsa, for example, does the same thing, but he's like in a professional academic way. He kind of goes on a 20-minute monologue to answer a reporter question. He goes on a 20-minute monologue giving a thorough analysis of why your question or your framing is retarded. Okay, but he does it professionally, you see? And yeah, this was just one little instance where Pochettino did the same thing. He got asked, oh, so how are you going to reintegrate like the main guys, you know? And he's like, who the fuck are the main guys? What are you talking about? Yeah, he word for word, I don't understand this question. Like, your question is retarded, okay? Because let's look at the subtext. It's basically saying, nobody's fucking safe here. Don't tell me who the guys are. Me and my technical staff are going to deduce who the guys are, not some scrub reporter or somebody off the street here who thinks he knows football. I'm going to tell you, and hey, everybody has an opportunity for the next window in September. We're going to analyze everybody's situation. Scrutinize was his word. Scrutinize everything. And then we'll see who gets a call up. But the World Cup is 1 year away still. Don't tell me that 1 year away, the guys that you just mentioned are going to be the guys. Fuck you. And great. Even if in the back of his mind, he's like, yeah, those are my guys. Like Christian's going to be the guy, or these guys are going to be the guys. Even if he thinks that right now, it's great. You have to still set a standard and send a message to your players. You are not safe. Don't think for a second that because your name is Christian Pulisic, or your name is Serginho Dest or Anthony Robinson or Moose or whatever, and because you play at Milan or because you play at Fulham or because you play at PSV, don't think for a second that just because of the pedigree, which is what leads people here in the States astray, the fans of the media, they're totally brainwashed by pedigree. Don't think that because you have that pedigree, you're making my team. No chance.
Yeah, no, I love that he said that, dude, because I think if he would have came out and said the opposite of, yeah, like we were missing a lot of our guys, I think a lot of those guys start to get complacent and mentally checked out. You know, it's kind of like Jesse Marsh when he said, well, at first he said like, yeah, any Canada player that I called wanted to come and they'll drop everything. And then once they got bounced, he was like, yeah, the truth is we're missing, you know, 50% of our guys. So the fact that Pochettino has the balls to come out and say that, I think that's huge, bro, because yeah, nobody should feel safe, dude. No, it doesn't matter what you've done in the past, what club you're at. You still have to grind. You still have to prove that not only that you want to be there, but you're capable of being there. So I think that was big of him to come out and say it. And again, it's not easy. I mean, you've seen like Berhalter, Rick and Bruce Arena, like they never said things like that, dude. So
yeah, no chance. No chance. And beyond those guys, there's criticism by the fans here again who know fuck all about, oh, Pochettino just doesn't know our player pool. He makes the wrong roster decisions. Why is Adjemang playing? It should have been somebody else and all this sort of stuff. So superficial. I don't know Pochettino and what he's thinking either. Only he and his technical staff know. But I'll give you from a manager's perspective, right? Some of the psychology, some of the things to consider. Number one, you think long term. You don't think short term. The World Cup, everybody's like, oh, the World Cup is only a year away. We don't have time. It's still a year. Okay. A lot can happen in a year. Look, a year ago, Diego Luna was invisible. And now everybody's like, oh my God, Diego Luna. That's what can happen in 1 year. So there's that. There's the perspective of how much time there is. Number two, if I were him, I'd be desperate. First off, 6 years of damage was done with the player pool. Who was elevated to the highest levels of American soccer was done by the gatekeepers for the past 6 years. That is the primordial damage. So now this guy inherits that damage. And he's like, again, I don't know what he's thinking, but I'm giving people something to noodle over. The guy's thinking, Jesus Christ, fucking everything is shocking, right? And he probably already knew that coming in to a certain degree, but after getting a few camps and seeing players, you know, training and doing a rondo, you know, imagine where he's coming from. Right? Tottenham, Chelsea, PSG, and you see the rondos there and you do the rondos here and you're like, my fucking God, like Tyler Adams is shocking, for example, or whatever. He's like, fuck me. So then you get a level of desperation as a manager. You're like, the pool is shocking. Let's fucking go outside the box here. So Adjemang, for instance, might be thinking completely outside the box, getting a completely different type of player profile for a nine, because maybe in his assessment, he's like, I can't play with a type of nine that is a Josh Sargent or a type of nine that is Bepi or a type of nine that is Balogun, right? Which are more dynamic, sort of agile players. Maybe with the player pool that I've inherited or that I see this thing, I need more of a fucking big body type, a different profile, right? Like Adjemang. And you don't think Pochettino knows that Adjemang is shocking technically? Of course he knows he's shocking technically. You know, but maybe that's not what he's looking for. And he's doing this experiment to see if, hey, is this a possible profile that I could use that could bring us value? So if that's the case, you don't give the guy a substitute role. You know, like you don't start the other guys and then have the Adjemang guy go in for 10, 15 minutes at the end of the game, just to see, right? And you don't start the guy two games and then you already draw your conclusions. Okay, he's out. No, you give him a whole fucking tournament, right? You give him an entire 40-day trial. You play him every single minute because you need to give the player confidence too, to see if he'll blossom with his confidence. So I'm giving people a manager's perspective, a coach's perspective as to potential explanation as to why, right, some decisions might be made. That is a possible explanation of why you have that guy on the field. And same with other guys. The Arfston guy, the outside back, okay, shocking defender. Great. But, you know, he gives you a lot of offensive projection, perhaps. You know, he likes what he sees on the offensive side of the ball. Let's give him a shit ton of minutes. Let's see if this is a potential solution or a substitute to, you know, Serginho Dest or whoever's going to be the starter. Again, I'm giving people a rationale from a practitioner's perspective.
Yeah, that's why it's frustrating, Gary, when people say, you know, Pochettino doesn't know the players, or Pochettino, I think it was Bruce Arena who said it, like, oh, we need to have a U.S. manager or an American manager because they're going to understand the mentality of these players, or Pochettino hasn't gone and watched these guys play enough. Like, you don't think the second that he got hired as a national team coach that he was every single day watching countless hours of videos and analyzing the player pool and having his staff analyze the pool? Like, this guy knows, bro. I mean, and
of course,
the fact that people are like, oh, like Pochettino should have played this guy and he doesn't really know much about the other guy. Like, even you saw Casey Keller came out and said, like, oh, I haven't seen Pochettino have a full commitment to the national team. He doesn't know, so he has to dive in first. We haven't seen that. We've seen him doing a lot of other things, but we haven't seen him being truly represented. You hear players, have you spoken with Pochettino? No, he's never called me. I've not talked to him. I don't know where I stand. That's fine if you're a club coach, because in a club, if someone doesn't buy into you, what you're saying, you just go buy somebody else. But as a national team coach, you only have what you have.
Everything is the opposite. It's the opposite of what he just said. The exact opposite. If you're a club coach, you're stuck with players under contract. You're stuck with a roster until transfer windows come and moves can be made. And sometimes those moves can't be made. You know, and the player's like, nah, I'm not fucking going anywhere. And you're stuck with a player under contract. And the guy you want to bring in, maybe a deal doesn't get struck. But on the national team, oh, I don't like you, or you don't like me, or fuck you. I can just go out and pick whoever the fuck I want to pick. I have the whole country to pick from. And yes, you are limited by how many American soccer pros there are, but you can just dump and swap as much as you like. There's no players under contract for the U.S. men's national team. And to boot, this is where people go wrong. It's not like the American soccer professional player that there's such a huge disparity in gradation, right? It's not like there's this group up here that is so outrageously superior to the next possible group that you can't swap out players. That is a myth, guys. It is an absolute myth.
Why do you think this smear campaign is starting to happen with Pochettino? Like, you see a bunch of former U.S. men's national team players and people in the media, they're already starting to kind of slander Pochettino and say, like, oh, maybe he wasn't the guy, or this guy doesn't know the tactics of the U.S. that would help them succeed the most. So, and especially because they lost the final, I think if they would have won, the narrative's completely different. You know, Poch is the guy, he knows what he's doing.
No, Ben, they wouldn't say that Poch knows what he's doing.
The casual fans would, though, no? The casual fans that would say, like, he got the tactics right. Look at what he did with this B team with the U.S.
No, I think they would give credit to the players, Benny. They would say the players are good. Yeah, the players are good. Look how good we're doing at development now, that we didn't even have to call the main guys. And look, these guys handle business with style, and they were sensational. And look at Diego Luna, and look at all these guys that are coming up from the system. That would have been the story. It would not be pro Pochettino. But to answer your question, from the Kellers and from these other guys, they don't like foreigners. They don't want somebody outside the family to be in these positions. They all want to keep it in-house. They all want the same good old boy network to control everything. They want somebody that they can just call on the phone or text or whatever, and you're going to get an immediate response because you're all homies. You know what I'm saying? And you all look out for each other and you all take care of each other. And if you need a favor, hey, man, you know, call this guy up or call that guy up, or you want credibility. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you recommend somebody that you'll be taking seriously, like if Keller like were to get a hold of Pochettino somehow, some way, and say, hey, Poch, X, Y, or Z, take a look at this or take a look at that guy or whatever. Pochettino, like, who the fuck are you? You know what I'm saying? They don't like that, Benny. They don't like that. Yeah. And even worse, if you are employed by the establishment. So I don't know who signs Casey Keller's checks, okay? But all I know that is he is part of the network, part of the good old boys. So you need to play that game.
Yeah.
So you don't want foreign, you don't like foreigners. You don't want foreigners. That's why, Ben. It's all centered around that.
Yeah. Well, how do you think Pochettino got hired in the first place?
Fan pressure. The fans have the power. I've been saying it a million times. And that was one of the few instances that demonstrate to the question, the comment that you posed to me earlier from that one guy. He's like, oh, what do you expect? What do you want from the fans, Gary? You know, blah, blah, blah. That's an example of what I want from the fans. Look at the result you got. You put so much pressure on the establishment, MLS / US soccer, that whole corrupt cabal. You put so much pressure that they weren't able to do what they wanted to do. They wanted to bring in Steve Cherundolo. They wanted to bring in the Sporting Kansas City guy or Jim Curtin, you know, who did really well with the Philadelphia Union office of MLS. You know, they wanted to bring in their boys, you know, to be in continue being in control. But the fans put so much pressure, they weren't able to get away with it. That's why they waited so goddamn long to hire. They were waiting to see if the fan outrage would chill, and calm down to a certain level where then they could get away with it. But we didn't calm down. And so they had to go out and get the world-class, high-profile manager. They had to. They were forced to.
Yeah, I saw Paul Spacey recently just posted that people on Twitter are calling for Berhalter to be rehired or to bring back Bruce Arena. Somebody commented on his post is Berhalter available? Things are so good when he was the manager. That's just insane.
Yeah,
let's hope, you know, the casual fans or 80% of the fans don't start uprising and demanding for change and demanding Pochettino be fired because, like you said, dude, the fans have the power. So if the wrong fans get out there, then we're screwed, bro.
Well, this is what MLS / US soccer is world class at, is the game of politics, right? The game of narrative control, the game of putting themselves in a win-win situation off the field. And so that is the whole Pochettino thing. They hired Pochettino and they're like, okay, we're in a win-win. First off, it wasn't our choice. The fans pressured us into doing this. So it's on them if this goes bad, right? And if it goes bad, not only is it on them, but we get to now have the narrative of like, you see, we got the big, bad, world-class foreigner in here, and it was shocking. We're not doing that again, right? So for the next 10, 15, 20 years, they're going to get their corrupt little boys who don't know shit about football to be in control of the national team program, which is the biggest microphone, the biggest podium in the country. So that's why it's so powerful, because from that podium, you have narrative control, Benny. So there's their win-win. Pochettino fails, the corrupt media, the corrupt monopoly wins. If Pochettino is successful, the corrupt monopoly wins also, because like then they'll take the credit for it. Oh, you see, we know what we're doing. Yeah, we hire the right guy. Shut the fuck up. When we make decisions, all of you fans, everybody, shut the fuck up. We're in charge. So it gives them political capital to do even more things. Because if the national team is successful at the World Cup, bro, it's the narrative is like, you see, we built this whole empire the right way. It's working. Our development is amazing. Look at all the progress. Look at all the stadiums. And it's culminating in the national team getting to a semifinal. We're on the right path. So shut the fuck up with your promotion relegation. Shut the fuck up with all of your nonsense. We know what we're doing. So it's a win-win, Ben.
The house always wins, dude. I learned that this weekend. Well,
there is one way to lose. And the way for the house not to win is, I was hoping the rumors of Pochettino having interviewed with a European club or clubs, you know, overseas, I was hoping it was kind of true, because the way to break out of this win-win, in a sense, not completely, is Pochettino says, you know what? I'm out. Peace. Fuck you. Breaking my contract with US soccer, I'm going to go be the Tottenham coach or whoever coach over there. Because then they don't get that win-win storyline that I just told you. The way that they would spin it, though, is, you see, can't get the foreigner world-class guy because they aren't committed to the cause. We need the American guy because they'll be committed to the cause. But the good, hey, I'm just hoping though, like there is no gag order so that Pochettino starts saying a lot of truths.
Yeah. So let's imagine something wild here, Gary. U.S. makes World Cup semifinal, or somehow some miracle happens and the U.S. makes the final of the World Cup 2026. In a way, is that kind of bad for our country in terms of our soccer? Because then MLS and U.S. soccer can come out and say, look at our league. We're producing these players. We don't need promotion and relegation. The fans in this country are starting to build up more. And look at all these stadiums that we have. Soccer is now the number one sport. Would that kind of be a bad thing for this country, Ray?
Absolutely. 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 It'd be terrible. Yeah. It'd be really bad. Yes.
And there's a chance that happens, dude. I mean, think about it. You're at home. Anything can happen. I'm sure when it comes to the World Cup, the fans will make their presence known in terms of the U.S., but obviously not like Latin American countries or European countries, but still you have home field advantage. And yeah, dude, I don't know. I can see him making a quarterfinal. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Benny, look, things happen in football, and especially when you're at home. So I don't know, when was it? The South Korea World Cup. I think South Korea went all the way to the semifinal. And not to demean the South Koreans, but, and they are good at football, but they aren't semifinal good at football. And you still get there. So things can happen in football, especially in the home country. Russia, the World Cup was in Russia, my memory serves me right, they ultimately ended up losing to Croatia, and Croatia went on to the final against France. But Russia performed very well. And who is Russia in global football when the World Cup is somewhere else? You know, non-existent. So the home, and when the World Cup was here in 94, the U.S. men's national team beat Colombia 1-0. Colombia was one of the favorites to win the World Cup. Colombia had just come out of South American CONMEBOL qualifying by annihilating Argentina 5-0. And the U.S. men's national team in that World Cup lost to the champions Brazil barely 1-0. So the home team could go very far. But to answer your question again, yes, it would be very, very bad for American soccer and the ecosystem if they were successful in the World Cup. So what is a good outcome? Let's make like maybe a quarters max. Because then it's kind of like Pochettino, the foreigner, got us to the quarters. Cool. We're still not a serious soccer nation. Can't crack the quarters. Fine. So the narrative of we still suck at soccer exists. And if we don't get as far as the quarters and we're eliminated against second round or something like that, it's like, oh, the big bad foreigner doesn't know what he's doing. We need one of our boys in charge.
Yeah. What happens if Mexico wins, bro?
No chance, bro. Oh, the Mexicans. I love my Mexican people, but Mexican fans have been on quite a ride the past 20 years or so. They thought they were amazing, you know, when I was a kid, and me and my buddies would always have to put them in their place. Like, you guys fucking suck balls, right? Terrible. And we'd clown on them every time Argentina would beat them, or any time the Colombia or Chile or, you know, Brazil would clown on them. So that kept them at bay a little bit, but they still thought they were tough shit. And then the U.S. took over Mexico in CONCACAF, you know, in whatever it was, the past 10 years or something like that, 15 years. And they were no longer kings of CONCACAF. So that brought a dose of humility to the Mexicans. And they've been humble kind of ever since. But now they're coming back and starting to be a little bit arrogant again, because they won the last Gold Cup. They won this Gold Cup. Yeah. They got a 16-year-old in this Gilberto Mora kid now. Oh, we're back. You know, we know what we're doing. We got Edson Alvarez in the Premier League. You know, Raul Jimenez is all fired up again. We're legit contenders once more. Chill. Calma. Calma, everybody.
Yeah, we won't hear the end of this one for a while, dude. Sure.
I think Mexico, I want them to do well, though. So it'd be cool if they got to a semifinal. That would be cool. I would like to see that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, correct me if I'm wrong also, but the World Cup got expanded, right, in the number of teams. So I'm assuming some of the groups are going to be shocking. So even, you know, making a round of 16 run is not going to be as impressive. You know what I'm saying? So
won't it be round of 32? You know, if you get out
Right. Yeah. So round of 32 and then 16. But yeah, I have a feeling US and Mexico will get out of their groups and we'll see, dude. We'll see. What do you think Pochettino took out of this whole tournament this past, 3 months with the team, this whole cycle? And do you think he's going to continue to be outspoken? Or do you think as it gets close to the World Cup, he's going to not shut his mouth a little bit, but, change the narrative?
I don't know, Ben. What did he get out? I think with such an extended camp, 40 days and so many games, right? The two friendlies against decent opponents and then all the whole Gold Cup. That is enough for him and his staff to really understand the players that they brought in, what their capabilities are and what their capabilities are not. And I think he's also trying to form a team that has the mentality to compete, because the last episode I did with Kefren, much of it also centered around mentality and culture and how soft the players of this country have also gotten. Just super soft. You look at the past generations, like Wijnaldum, like Stewart, like Brian McBride, like Tab Ramos, like Claudio Reyna, like you just go down the whole list. They were fighters, grinders, blue collar workers, which is why the U.S. got the reputation that it got globally in soccer, which is, the U.S.? Yeah, not great, but man, they're dogs. You know, they'll go out there and scrap and grind and make it difficult for you. Okay. And you look at the current generation, the past 10 years again, soft as fucking pudding, bro. Just weak, mentally weak. Okay. And you don't see them going hardcore. People will say, look, when Weston McKinney's shirt got torn when they played against Mexico, you know, that whole, okay.
Diego Luna broke his nose though. He came back on the field, Gary.
Okay. But maybe Diego Luna is one who has that fire in him, which is maybe why Pochettino is like, I like this kid. He's got fire. He is going to run through a wall for me. That is what I need as a manager. I need people who are going to run through a wall for me. I don't need a player who's going to say like, hey coach, I want to take some time off. I don't want to go to your camp. You know what I'm saying? I need a break. I don't need that guy. I want the fucking guy to run through a wall for me. I want the guy who's going to say, yeah, I'm down. You want me to divorce my wife? Done. I'm coming to camp.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll see if he chooses to leave those type of players off. But yeah, dude, I think by the World Cup, Pochettino, one, I think he already knows his guys in the back of his head, even if he's saying he's not. But I think he's going to continue to have individual conversations, and I think you're gonna hopefully we see that dog type mentality back in the World Cup, because if you can attribute any success to the U.S., that's been kind of their identity, right? That dog mentality, fighting in games. And I think you're right, in the past couple of years that's kind of gone away from this team, so we'll see if he can bring it back.
I think a lot of the roster decisions that people keep harping on, and him getting all these MLS guys and not bringing some of the European guys that were available, right? But for one reason or another, were not called. I genuinely think the guy is desperate. I think he's desperate. I think he thinks the pool sucks and he's desperate to find the hidden gems that have not been elevated. So he wants to see for himself what else is out there.
Yeah, and it's hard because the timing of when he came in, and think about it, Gary, the Gold Cup final was their last competitive match that they're going to play. Maybe they'll have one or two more friendlies, but he's not going to be able to get to see him again until the World Cup, really. So it's hard, dude.
It is hard.
People think Pochettino has it easy. He can get any of these guys. He has all these players at his disposal, but the timing of when he came in and what has been built up in the past, he's kind of set up for failure, bro.
100%. You need a full cycle usually to really turn over the damage from the previous cycle or previous cycles. You can't come in 18 months out from the biggest competition that exists for the sport and be expected to do some sort of transformation. That's fucking psychotic to think that that's possible.
Yeah, for sure. All right, dude, any parting message to the fans, bro?
Look, if you're listening to this show, I'm being sincere here. I think the fan base in general is kind of on the right path. It's just from my perspective, I mean, they are leveling up because you wouldn't get this sort of criticism for the manager or for the federation or for whatever 10 years ago. So I think they are leveling up. It just sucks how slowly they're leveling up. And I want to show them, and I think Pochettino and others want to show them, hey, here's real soccer culture. Here's where you are, and here's how to get from here to there. And unfortunately, so many don't want to hear that, but you need to hear it. It's the only way we're going to get from here to here. And you're making your way up the mountain, but let's accelerate, man. Let's accelerate things, and let's not be soft. Please be more hardcore. Stop buying into the narratives of it's only a game, Gary. Don't take it so seriously. Go touch grass, all that sort of stuff. That culture is the wrong culture.
Yeah. What were you going to say, that if you're listening to this and then you kind of...
Well, I think the whole fan base is kind of on the right track, but it's fucking taking forever. And they're being distracted by the media, the manipulators that are the media and the establishment. They're being derailed constantly, you know, with stupid narratives. But if you're listening to this show, then at least you have some sort of immunization. I'm trying to vaccinate you a little bit, right? Against all that shit, all that disease that's out there. So I think it's good, even though it seems so negative, right? Blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? That is a proper soccer culture. Proper soccer culture has a huge infusion of negativity associated with it. Because that is what that's what levels you up, man, is thinking worst case scenario and how do we avoid worst case scenario. So sorry, but if you were to hear Argentine, the equivalent of me in Argentina, I'm a puppy. You should hear the shit that goes down over there in Brazil. I am a lap dog compared to what it really is like. But you see me obviously as some sort of, I don't know, demon that should be exorcised.
Yeah. I love the comment, or somebody commented, like, how does anybody listen to this guy, or this guy's takes are wild, but that guy himself is listening to, you know? So it's just fucking funny.
Hey, if I have to be that guy, a train wreck, and you want to shit on me, then I'll be that guy. Hopefully somebody comes up after me or whenever who can be the diplomatic one, the voice of reason, the one that speaks to you in a soft meditative voice and sounds like an intellectual, you know, and he creates an organized movement, you know, and instead of me, I'm like Che Guevara or something, like bam, 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 like guerrilla warfare type thing, like the Americans who are fighting the crown, you know, and the Americans wouldn't line up, the soldiers wouldn't line up in nice, neat lines, and then they would point, you know, and the other team would also line up in nice, neat lines, and like, ready, aim, fire, and they both shoot at each other, and let's see who survives. Like, nah, I'm like the Americans battling the crown who hides behind trees, and the crown, and those people are like, they have no class, they're fucking dogs, they're wild, you know, they don't know how to, you know, be gentlemen and be gentlemanly in war, you know? Okay, I'm that guy. You should be too.
Legend, bro. All right,
okay.
Good stuff.
We were going to talk coaching stuff, but we'll leave that for the next episode. Sorry, it's just the U.S. Men's National Team. It was the USMNT season. We mentioned that we were going to do a little bit more of current event type things as well, because we think it's valuable, as I said, to inject some immunity into our audience so that they don't get brainwashed and indoctrinated by the monkeys that are doing MLS's bidding out there. So I think it's important from the educational perspective, but we'll come back next time with some coaching education. Right, Benny?
Come get your 3-4-3 vaccine, bro.
There you go. Hey, maybe that'll be the thumbnail for this one. 3-4-3 immunizations, free of charge.
Yeah, well, we'll make it like the government, bro. Mandatory.
Mandatory. Oh, Lord.
Good stuff.
All right, brother. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.